Yeah, so Cleverman sort of started roughly around 7 years ago now. It was an afternoon sort of playing Ninja Turtles with my son. He was dressed up as a Ninja Turtle, and both him and I really love our superheroes, and I thought, you know, I wanted to create something that he could connect to on a cultural level, you know, something that could hopefully break through all the pop culture that he watches and listens to and all that. So it originally sort of started as a kids show. The name of the show was called Dreamtime Detectives at that time. But the more that we sort of worked on the idea and trying to stay as true as possible to the original dreaming stories, we realised that aging it up would allow us to tell the stories right. Also, you know, open us up to exploring bigger issues than things that you can sort of tell on a children's platform.
So did you talk to any elders about your ideas about bringing this forward?
Yeah, absolutely. In the early stages, even when we were in the kids stage, we had talked to, you know, firstly I started from my own country and went back up there and spoke to elders up that way. And then also we had John Bell, one of the writers. He's a Bungalong man. We headed up north, Northern Rhythms in New South Wales to speak to some elders up there. And then also we have language in the show, so we have to speak to some elders and make sure it's okay to use the language. And they even helped us through that process all the way through. And also we have a creature from out in the middle of the NT. So I headed out to Catherine and spoke to an elder out there and to get the permission and adhere to what that story stands for.
I was interested to talk about this, the cultural aspect first, before we go into, I guess, the makeup of the show. But you know, regarding the Clever Man and the story, you know, the stories and things that we hear around sorcery, and some things that we can't actually talk about. So, what was the response in bringing something or someone in our communities or in our families who is very sacred and at times we can't talk about? How was the process of actually bringing that forward into the commercial realm?
There's two ways that we went around that. We spoke to the elders and told them this is what we wanted to do. We wanted to, you know, I talked to them about creating a show for my son and touching on the cultural aspects of that. But I also wanted to tell them that, you know, what we were wanting to create wasn't the traditional Clever Man that we have part of our culture, you know, because it is such a sacred position, you know. It is often men's business, and so it was just sort of talking them through to create a Clever Man that is the TV show Clever Man. It's not a retelling or you know, depiction of Clever Man from any of the countries that we gained permission from. This is a twist to create what will become our Clever Man. I think that's the benefit of having the superhero and sci-fi world to help, you know, shape that. But again, it also comes down to when we're in the writer's room, we're talking what we can and can't say around the Clever Man as well. You know, like there's certain things that the superhero genre world ask for when dealing with a new superhero. And some of these questions we couldn't answer because of the cultural protocols. And that was a really, you know, it can be difficult, but it was quite nice having, you know, our partners, our international partners, you know, respecting those and not pushing those boundaries. If it got to the point where I would say, you know, look, we can't do A, B, or C because of the protocols, they wouldn't push it any further. They'd respect that, and we'd try and find a new way to tell parts of the story.
Great. It's good to talk to you about this because it's been things that I've been thinking about leading up to the show premiering. And then, so obviously the setting is futuristic, but as we know, the persecution of the Clever Man, certain people in the communities who were smart enough to be able to get around some of the armies that were coming in, you know. So these people were persecuted people, and your story is futuristic, but it tells a story that's already happened before with, you know, the progression of the actual storyline. It's when you watch it, it's like, this has happened before.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is something that we really wanted to work on, you know. Like, for me, you know, you just raised it then, you know, when post-colonisation, the Cleverman role was very much the very first thing to be removed from our culture because we were being introduced to a new religion and these religions were saying, you know, there is a more powerful being than the ones that you are saying, you know, that you were putting power in. And so these were the first things that were shut down for our people. And you know, we talk about that in our show. You know, we talk about the Uncle Jimmy character being, which is played by Uncle Jack Charles. And there was a period there where this oppression from colonization really turned our own people against these sort of roles. You know, we would consider a clever man being a bit crazy or off the rails, if you will. And so we really wanted to see parts of that in the show. And there are different elements of that bleeds into to several of our characters. We were always trying to look at treatment of Aboriginal people, but trying to find a new way to tell that. So, you know, so we're not sort of putting anyone off in a way that we're trying to tell, you know, social realism or anything like that. We're trying to sort of blend that in into this genre world at the same time.
Mm. And there's a few heroes in the story. When you talked about your original concept of the Dreamtime detectives and superheroes, well, you know, watching the show, there are a few heroes and superheroes within the show. But when you're talking about the story of the clever man and how, because of the issues around colonisation, it made it that people turned against each other because of the hierarchy within structures as well, which is sort of, you know, part of the storyline.
Yeah, we really wanted to, I guess one of the one things that we talk about in the writer's room is how we treat the other, and whatever that other may be, it could be any minority, but also I wanted to also talk about how we as a community treat each other. You know, I feel identity is quite a big thing within our community, identity and connection to culture. And I think that really stems from a ripple effect from the stolen generation in a way, you know, like we've had separation from people, from land, from culture, and it's sort of stayed within our communities in a way that sometimes we as a community uphold to some of that. So not only are we getting to see that from the powers that be, but also from ourselves as well. So there are community arguments as well throughout the series.
Yeah. When you see that society within the zone, we've actually got that really going on out there. We've got people living in communities like that, you know, within city structures, even out in the bush. But those zones are definitely part of our society. And then the fibre that makes, you know, people who are staying together because they have something in common and they are trying to keep away from the system. I mean, we've got that going on.
Yeah, and I think that's the way of telling our story that hasn't really been seen on screen before. You speak to anyone that's outside of Australia and you talk about Aboriginal people and they go straight to blackfellas being painted up and being in the desert, you know. They're missing a whole lot more into that world. For us was to create this slightly dystopian future, but also taking what's happening now and how we as Aboriginal people live in a modern world, but also blending in the history of our past in the same way. So you get to see these different communities and how they interact with each other, but also how they interact with the Western world in a way.